Today, the Florida Senate is considering gun legislation that would arm some teachers and raise the age to purchase a rifle to 21. So the debate over guns carries on after last month's school shooting in Florida. But whenever Americans have this debate, there seems to be a consistent pattern. The conversation breaks down. Each side vilifies the other. Navy veteran Adam Weinstein believes imprecise language is making matters worse. He says words like automatic weapon, clip, assault rifle, magazine, they're just thrown around without understanding. Weinstein writes for Task and Purpose. It's a publication covering military and veterans' issues, and he has a concealed carry permit. His gun collection has included an AR-15, a Ruger handgun, a Smith & Wesson pistol. He owns collectibles with his father. Adam, welcome to Here and Now. And as a gun owner, do you think the gun debate in this country is at an impasse?
I think it's absolutely broken down, and I think that language plays a big part in that. You've seen both sides for as long as you can remember. We talked about and argued about assault weapons and what that even meant in the early 1990s and the late 80s. So as long as I can remember, coming to some kind of a consensus on the parlance, or not coming to that consensus and just using language disconnects as a way of building up your own group identity has just been part and parcel of the gun discussion.
So to that point, I want to play two pieces of tape now. The first one is of President Obama, and this is after the Sandy Hook shooting. He's talking about gun control.
We can do a much better job in terms of keeping these magazine clips with high capacity out of the hands of folks who shouldn't have them.
The president, of course, as you know, was slammed for using this term magazine clip, which apparently is not a thing. Most people probably don't know that. And then here's Republican Senator Marco Rubio talking at the recent town hall in Florida after the Parkland shooting. Someone had asked him about magazine capacity.
And I'm glad you asked that question, because I traditionally have not supported looking at magazine clip size. And after this and some of the details I've learned about it, I'm reconsidering that position, and I'll tell you why.
So this is not just an issue of Democrats not knowing the language of guns, but in this case also a Republican who is a very strong proponent of guns in the United States.
Yeah. Again, well, chances are pretty good that when you speak to a politician, they're not going to be so well engaged on this issue as a lot of people are for the parlance. You know, the magazine clip distinction is a very fine one, but it's one that if it comes up in conversation, you almost immediately know that you're speaking to somebody who comes from a different perspective or a different point of view. And it's also hugely fueled by our media and by television and movies. Like, those terms are used interchangeably. A lot of these are used interchangeably, and so we absorb some of those media lessons.
Okay, so tell us, what is the difference between a magazine and a clip, and why it frankly matters?
Right. So a magazine is just a container. It's usually it clips on to your firearm and feeds you fill it with your rounds or your cartridges, and it feeds those rounds into your firearm. A clip is not an enclosure. It just is exactly what it sounds like. A little strip usually that you can use to load certain weapons, not a whole lot, or to load those cartridges into a magazine. So, you know, the common way of thinking of it is a clip feeds a magazine feeds a weapon. Does it matter that much? I'm not sure that it does. Again, I think it's just sort of a cultural signifier of where you're coming from this issue on.
Well, there is a narrative, and you've already touched on this, on the right, that people who are anti-gun are uninformed, that they've never touched a gun. So how in the world do they deserve to have an opinion? But Democrats do own guns. They are engaged with this issue. And they might often say the right's view of things, the facts that the right brings to the table, don't line up with reality. I mean, you have to give them that occasionally, too.
Well, yeah, I'll give you one recent example. So down here after the Parkland school shooting, CNN hosted that town hall forum for a lot of the survivors and their families to speak with political representatives and representatives of the industry. Dana Loesch was there representing the NRA's point of view. And at one point, a mother of a victim in the shooting asks her, how can these weapons that we're talking about be justified under the 1791 Second Amendment? And Loesch cited this British political novelty, the Puckle gun from the 18th century, and a Belton rifle, which is in the Smithsonian, as proof that the founding fathers, quote, had fully automatic firearms. Now, I'm writing a book on the Belton, so that I can say that argument's problematic on a bunch of fronts. But she used this term, fully automatic firearms, to describe something that was developed in 1758 that had a piece of flint to fire, and a guy manually used it to maybe get 8 shots out in a minute. If anybody who was a gun control advocate used that term that incorrectly and carelessly, the NRA would jump all over them.
Right. Yeah. So what's the consequence of having someone like the spokeswoman of the NRA using that kind of language?
Well, I mean, it signifies that I think a lot of the language debate is not necessarily a good faith debate among gun owners who are on the Second Amendment NRA side, saying, come understand us, get to know these machines before you want to develop public policy around them. Instead of that, you're getting a lot of, they will never understand us, and we have to maintain our identity as people who know better than everybody else, and we have to fight public policy from the ignorant.
Well, the person who comes to the table and makes a mistake when they're having a conversation with a gun owner could feel personally attacked when that's brought up. It could shut down the conversation. And so I guess what I'm just trying to say is, like, how much responsibility do gun owners have to make sure that they can bring a non-gun owner into the conversation so that you can actually have a productive conversation?
You know, this is one of those things I've never quite understood about the turn that you see in gun culture, certainly since, I mean, those elements of kind of the personal identity and, you know, inability to compromise have always been there. But as a child, I grew up in a community of responsibility and kind of an evangelist community. When you enjoyed shooting sports, you wanted to share them with other people. I covered the NRA annual meeting with my girlfriend, who is a photographer, a couple of years ago, and it was her first opportunity to hold an air gun. And she was totally hooked. And my argument has always been, you know, you have a pastime that it has value when it's used responsibly and when you invite people in to understand it. So I think a lot of the onus right now has to be on the owners and the possessors of this knowledge and this technology to say, here's how it forms a part of our lives. And we may have to disagree on some things, but, you know, I need to help you understand what we're actually talking about.
But
I don't think they're doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, if it's hard for that message to get through if on the other side someone says, I don't want anything to do with any machine that is responsible for having killed 17 innocent people in a school. You know, it's like if you're against guns, you could understand why somebody doesn't even want to touch them or be told why they're valuable.
You have to. I mean, I lost a wrestling coach in the Parkland shooting. I have known other victims of gun violence. And, you know, I can't imagine looking a person who suffered like that in the eye and trying to explain, you got to get the distinction between an assault weapon and an assault rifle. Because that does seem trivial in the long run to somebody who is literally on the other end of these weapons. And that's a viewpoint that I think isn't taken seriously enough by gun owners.
So this hits close to home for you.
Yeah, that forms the basis of a lot of my reporting and my writing right now, is that I feel a responsibility to talk about what I was raised knowing and the extent to which that's problematic and the extent to which that really can integrate in a society that can be peaceful and civil and not settle their differences this way. Mm. But eventually every American is going to be touched by this in one way or another, whether they're simply an owner or they know a victim or both.
An NPR Ipsos poll out on Friday showed that 3/4 of people who were polled think that gun laws should be stricter than they are now. Congress does not appear to be able to act upon that. Do you really think that getting the language right around guns on both sides is going to fix that?
Maybe it's the biases of my profession as a journalist. I have to hope that language can be a bridge and rather than, a breaker down between people. My concern here is that we have a great opportunity for every time somebody makes a misstep on the on this terminology, every time somebody betrays a little bit of ignorance, that's an ability or that's an opportunity to have a deeper conversation and a longer conversation. The problem is there's so many incentives on both sides right now for it to be the end of the conversation. You don't understand what I understand. There can be no common ground between us, and that's the problem.
You lost somebody that you know in the Florida shooting. You are a gun owner. Do you want tighter gun controls?
I do. I do think that a large number of the weapons that have passed through my hands over the years are not weapons that need to be as readily available as they are. I do think that we are, as a society, much more prone to enjoying our rights than we are exercising our responsibilities. And I think we need a coherent gun violence policy that acknowledges that. And that's going to require a little bit of effort and a little bit of talk on both sides.
That's Adam Weinstein. He's a Navy vet and a senior editor for Task and Purpose. It's a digital publication that covers military and veteran issues. Adam, thank you for taking the time to have this conversation with us today.
Thank you.